Let's keep our rolling coverage of the coronavirus crisis going with perspectives you might not hear elsewhere. If the virus overwhelms our health system, which, as we discussed last week, it's done in Italy, what sort of terrible choices could face Australia's medical professionals? Could they be forced to judge not simply the health needs of a patient, but whether a sick person is worth saving? And what if this idea takes hold and becomes a widespread part of future medical assessment? Xavier Simons is a bioethicist at Notre Dame University. He's a specialist on the rationing of healthcare.
We are in a situation where literally the sorts of scenarios that used to only be discussed in medical schools as hypotheticals have become a reality. So, for example, making decisions in the intensive care ward between whether you're going to save an 80-year-old who has multiple underlying health conditions or whether you're going to save a 40-year-old who is being severely affected by the coronavirus but is otherwise healthy. And that's a real choice that doctors have faced in Italy, for example, not just in Italy, but also in the UK now. Doctors in the US are also talking about the challenges that they're facing in their ICU wards. And so indeed in Australia, we may be facing such a situation within a matter of weeks. I don't think it's an over-dramatization. And I think we do have some serious ethical thought that we need to put into trying to identify how we should respond in those situations to those choices.
Well, yeah, the language coming out of Italy, and remember, this is a country under absolute siege and our hearts go out to them, but the language has become almost utilitarian. You say, you quote a guidance note that says resources may have to be used first for those with a higher probability of survival and secondly, for those who have the most years of life left and offer the maximum number of benefits to the majority of people. That's very utilitarian language.
That's right. Essentially, the Italian College of Anesthesia, Analgesia and Resuscitation have basically said that they think that in light of the circumstances, a utilitarian approach is called for. And it is, in a sense, quite a philosophical position that they've taken in that regard. And they basically decided that in light of the severely limited resources that they have in regions like Lombardy and other parts of Italy, that essentially is the best approach to take to try and abandon the first-come, first-served approach, which usually governs rationing in intensive care wards, and instead set an age limit, for example, on admissions to intensive care, and also consider the kind of life that a person will likely lead after they've recovered from the virus. That's one approach, but it's obviously got a lot of issues with it. And I think there are many members of the public who would be deeply uncomfortable with introducing age limits on access to intensive care, for example.
Well, it's not just age limits. I mean, this gets to that sort of classic question about if I have to save one of two lives, is it the Nobel Prize winner or is it the homeless man? And therefore, we are creating a kind of hierarchy. Is there a risk that in the aftermath of this epidemic, and it will be over at some point, that this sense of hierarchy of human life remains?
I think you're right about there being a risk there. I mean, in the end, triage in its origins dates back to the times of Napoleon, when basically doctors on the battlefield had to make a decision between treating a general or treating a very junior officer who had been injured. They had to make a decision between basing their treatment decisions on the rank of a soldier or their health condition. And the advice being given by some fairly senior medics in the French military was that they should, instead of rationing on the basis of rank, they should focus on just who's worse off. And that was a fairly novel contribution, I suppose, to the discourse on medical treatment at that time. And that's governed a lot of rationing policies and protocols from then on. But now we're seeing in this circumstance a very different approach. It's one which focuses not just on health utility, but social utility. So the contribution that someone makes to society. And I think that's very dangerous. I mean, one could say that even focusing on health utility has some problems attendant to it. But the idea of basically using medicine as an instrument to achieving economic ends and social ends is an additional, I think, ethical problem. So we need to be careful, I suppose, about rather than focusing on the goals of medicine, which are therapeutic and curative in nature, focusing instead on some economic aim or some really kind of dubious social calculus. I fear that there is a risk if we go too far down the track of a utilitarian approach to rationing that we will fundamentally change the approach to emergency medicine that we've taken so far.
This is a hotly disputed and in some sense discredited sort of medical theory, and that is this notion of herd immunity. You infect enough of the population in the hope that all the healthy ones sort of do well, and you protect as much as you can that sort of unhealthier group in the population. Now, even though I said it was discredited, it was in fact originally advanced by the chief scientific advisor to the UK government, a distinguished professor and knight, Patrick Vallance. Now, the government's now rejected that. But in a sense, we may be facing this as an informal policy in a few months' time, might we not? This notion that it's just become too hard to lock everything down, to keep everyone confined. We're just going to have to go to, if you like, an unspoken herd immunity policy.
That's right. There may come a time when that conversation begins in Australia, and indeed it's already taken place in the UK, as you mentioned. It is a very dubious notion. Scientifically, it's not entirely incorrect to say that a population can develop an immunity to a virus, and that does happen. But what's dubious about it is the calculus that's being mooted. Essentially, for example, in the UK, if you were to adopt that approach, one expert analyst said that if you took a herd immunity approach in the UK, that would basically require more than 47 million people to be infected. And with a 2.3% fatality rate, say, and a 19% rate of severe disease, that could result in more than a million people dying and a further 8 million needing critical care. So, I mean, just to think through the consequences of your policies is very important if you're going to have a conversation about, say, herd immunity. Because what we're dealing with here is not just hypotheticals and scientific modelling. What we're dealing with is a real-world pandemic situation, and that could very well cost thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives in Australia. And so I think we need to think through carefully the ramifications of any policy option that we're considering, particularly if it's one which involves exposing a large portion of the population, intentionally exposing them to the virus.
Just finally, Xavier, you think there's merit in an independent statutory body, maybe made up of judges and doctors, to oversee any sort of emergency measures. What would this independent statutory body actually do?
So the Law Council of Australia has rightly, in my view, called for the establishment of something like what you've just outlined, an independent statutory body. So basically what that means is it's an organisation or a committee that's charged with overseeing the implementation of something like the Biosecurity Act 2015. That's a piece of legislation that the federal government passed a few years ago, which basically authorises it to, for example, detain people in hospital for as long as they believe is necessary to protect the health of the public, or to detain people at airports if they think they're suspected of having the virus, and also even just to restrict public gatherings, sporting, musical, religious events and so on. What the statutory body would do, in my view, would be to monitor the government's implementation of the legislation and ensure that it's been put into place in a manner that is in accord with what we expect of the government and authorities generally, that they're acting in a way that's balanced, that's proportionate to the challenge.
Thanks for contributing to the conversation, Xavier.
No worries, Andrew. It's been fantastic. Thanks.
Xavier Simmons, he's a healthcare ethicist at Notre Dame University and also a 2020 Fulbright Future postgraduate scholar. And this is the Religion and Ethics Report.